T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
It's time to talk Sabres hockey. Let's get the inside story. Here's Sabres head coach, Don Granato. The Don Granato Show is being brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. By Losi and Ganji, workers' compensation and personal injury attorneys, working hard for hard-working Western New Yorkers. And by Town Auto Group. Check out Town Auto Group's lineup of EVs. Now with head coach Don Granato, here's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
Hi, good morning. Don Granato going to join us on the Western Hotline. Jeremy White, Jody Biasi. Moved from his normal Tuesday spot to a Thursday morning. Don, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
How's Winnipeg?
It is very cold.
I checked before we had you on. I wasn't sure if I was going to see a minus number. I see that it's 11 degrees, so.
Yeah, we walked to dinner last night, and about four steps out the door, I regretted that we were walking to dinner, so. It's cold.
You know, you have a lot of road trips, of course, over the course of the year. Some are to beautiful climates. Others are cold. And, I mean, at least the cold ones are quite often in hockey hotbeds. So I'd imagine you at least like that part of it.
I was going to say, don't say it's not beautiful here. It's just cold.
Yeah.
So it's hockey weather here. This is an area I come quite a bit in the off season to fish, and it's a beautiful area. It's just a little different this time of the year.
Yeah. Well, tonight, 8 o'clock our time against Winnipeg, looking to extend your winning streak. I'd imagine, Don, you're pretty happy with how the club's playing right now.
I'm happy, yes. Never content, though. It's you get to enjoy the win, as we did in Dallas the other night, for about 5 minutes. And then you're on, your brain moves to St. Louis and all that preparation. So I enjoyed the St. Louis win for about 5 minutes, too. And now it's on to Winnipeg, which is obviously a very good hockey team and a big challenge.
Talking about that St. Louis win, I mean, a 4-0 start, you know, you'd probably love to get up 4-0 in every game. It's a great place to be. As they start to come back, you know, what's it like to coach a young group, as especially on the road, right? 4-0, 4-1, 4-2. You want to make sure that, you know, everybody's mentally okay there. How does that, is it different, I guess, with a young group versus a veteran team in that spot?
Well, a veteran team, you have to, I think the reflex is it's a young group, so it's worse. Keep in mind, the longer a player's been in the NHL, the more they've lost. And the more scenarios, it's almost like the older the player, you're driving down the street, you know, you've been in a car accident and or two or three, and you know every potential car accident that can happen. and that's an analogy I use. I laugh as I think about it, because, you know, the older player's been through more losses, more hardship, more this, more that. Sometimes the naivety of being young is an advantage, only if you make it an advantage. And you know, that's what we have hoped to do with our young team. We don't want to tell them all the ways they could get, you know, they could get killed, but we want to tell them all the ways they can win and make sure they identify with that. So I like the way our team has responded, especially the other night. We did a real nice job of, you know, shutting St. Louis down and even frustrating them. They were frustrated by the end of that game. We had to change our game within the game, obviously, to close things down. And I thought our guys did really well with that. And obviously, Cousins did not lose sight of offensive opportunity as he fought through a couple guys and jumped the play quick. to put it away with the empty net goal.
And that's back-to-back wins on the road as you go city to city here, Don. And the record for the team, 14-7-1 on the road, that's eighth best in the NHL. It is better than the team's home record. Is there anything to you that might explain that? Could it just be randomness, something to do with the youth of your team? What do you think explains the fact that your road record is so much better than the home record this year?
Well, I did mention this in one of my media press conferences a couple weeks ago. And who knows the right answer, right? I mean, I don't even know that we need to find out the right answer. We just need to keep getting better as a team. But I do feel our players put a lot more pressure on themselves at home. They care. They play with a little more worry of, you know, we don't want to lose, instead of, you know, that excitement of let's just get after a win here. And so I don't think it's anything awful. I think it's somewhat natural with a younger roster and a younger team. It pulls you out of your, you know, out of your focus. And when you get on the road, it's, you know, these guys have only seen their teammates for 72 hours now. It's just zero in on the next game. There's no driving home. There's no, you know, there's nothing else but hockey. And obviously we can see when these guys have that ability or that opportunity to focus on that and such, they perform better to this point. And I've challenged our guys with certain things such as we're not practicing right now. And I said, you're just going to have to learn how to play without practice. So yesterday we didn't practice in between the games, Dallas and whoever we played before that, Anaheim, I think it was, we didn't practice. And so we've had a lot of off days without practice. We are a much better team when we're fresh, and we need to learn, but you lose a little bit of your timing and such when you're not practicing every day. You might fall out of rhythm. And we just have to learn how to do that, because it's the best way for us to perform. We perform our best when we're fresh. So just different things that you identify with your group and your team, and they have to identify with it, and I think we're continuing to progress.
Sabres head coach Don Granato, no practice because of this schedule, right? I mean, so many games in such a short period of time. Is it I don't know, are you making sure they're hyper-focused? Is it a blur? I mean, this many games smashed into such a small amount of time, I'd imagine it's a challenge for everybody.
Yeah, and for anybody that hasn't looked at our schedule, we will finish this week 12 games in, I think it's 20 or 21 days, 12 games in the NHL. So we're asking these guys to perform at a high level. We've been on the road back home, getting home at 2 in the morning and 3 in the morning, and back on the road again. So after this, in the next 20 days after this, we'll have 4 games compared to 12. So it's just a weird part of the year. And we've had to make adjustments, and one of the adjustments is just I've decided that we look a lot better rested. So we're pulling some practices out that normally you would skate, and when yesterday was one of them, the day before Dallas was one of them, and I thought, you know, anybody that watched the Dallas game, you saw we were half a step behind for the first 10 minutes, and sometimes that happens. And as I mentioned, I told our team, you better get used to this. Because this is what we need, is to take that day off.
Yeah. When it comes to that stretch of 4 games in 20 days, will you and the coaching staff use that as an opportunity to maybe, I don't know, hone in on a couple things you've been meaning to get to? You know, you're saying, like, if you can't practice, you got to learn in the games. Will there be will you view that as an opportunity to kind of be a little bit of a mini reset?
Yes, definitely. And the list of things is very, very long, as you can imagine, when you're sitting here watching your guys every day. But it's exciting. It's a list of, when we put a list together of things, it's not things necessarily that you have to fix. It's things that are exciting, where, wow, we can get so much better at this, at A, B, C, D, on down the line. And that's a lot of fun. So you have a long list, and obviously the next level is then what's the order, what's the priorities, because you only have so much time, and these guys only have so much ability to focus. So, you know, targeting the right next thing is huge in coaching. And so we'll do much more of that. We'll have a little bit of time to look at this 12-game segment, look at, you know, I watched Dallas and Carolina last night. It's good to get a context of, okay, we just played Dallas. You know, how do they look against Carolina or other teams in the league specifically? And you're always putting your next plan in context of the league as well. So the coaches will get a little break to start doing more or spend more time on that, I should say, not much of a break, but turn their attention to that, and that's exciting as well.
You know, you say the list is long. You've got a league-high 17 games with 5 goals or more, mm-hmm. and just saying, as the outsider here, I feel like that fixes a lot. You know, when you're getting these 5-goal games and 5 goals in St. Louis, it's a nice testament to the style that you've played. And you've pretty much talked about that from the beginning, that you want to play an entertaining style and about getting the offense on track and you know, defense being the kind of thing that gets you motivate players to get back to offense. That portion of the game seems to be working tremendously.
It is. It's. I mean, you know, when I took over, we were in dead last in goals per game, you know, 31st in the league. And now I think we're first in the league in goals per game. And nobody fears a team that can't score. You know, so if we couldn't score and we're averaging the lowest amount of goals in the league, who's going to fear us? And then on the other side, we have to keep it. If we can't score, we have to keep the game. I mean, we really have to buckle down on defense. It has to be like our complete identity, which is not fun, not exciting to watch, and miserable because you just feel like you can't score. And let's face it, no team's gonna respect you if you can't score on them. So you flip it the other way, and the hope is when you score and score a lot. The hope is that you can score and score a lot, and then the impact of that is the other team fears you, and the pregame meeting for the other team is watch out for this guy, watch out for that guy. You can't do this against this team, and so it just flips everything, and we've seen that. We've seen, you know, teams that we go in to play now scheme differently. They now worry about us. I can remember early, you know, I was still the interim coach. We finished the first period against Tampa Bay Lightning at home, KeyBank. We had 3 breakaways in the first period. We didn't score on any of them. We were losing 3-0 after the first period. And I joke that there's no possible way Tampa went in the locker room and said, hey, guys, we can't give up 3 breakaways. It just can't happen. There was no chance of it. If they talked about it, they were joking about it, like these guys can't score. So you flip it now and – they couldn't give up 3 breakaways with us. They would be concerned with it as anyone would be. So lots of progress by lots of guys, and I'm pretty proud of those guys for doing it.
And along the way here, I want to talk about your goaltending. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen in 15 games is 12-3. And, you know, I feel like you're getting a lot of goals, and sure, goals are going in, but the St. Louis game is a great example, a late stop and a big stop. How much of what you've been doing in the last month or so do you credit to the goaltenders that you toss in there? They're going to give up a goal or two here or there, but you're getting the stops you need.
Yeah, I credit Upi a lot, Craig Anderson a lot, you know, and Comrie as well. Those three guys, they help each other. They work for each other. They work for their team and teammates. And I also credit Kevin Adams, Terry Pegula. I mean, there's. I say this quite a bit. There's. Look at the Stanley Cup winning goaltenders that have been, you know, kicked aside and are in different organizations. So here's guys that were the elite of the elite, and now they're in a different organization. And I really believe that you have to support your goalie, and you have to you have to take as much pressure as possible off them, and allow them to just play. Because they are the last line of defense. They will always, always be somewhere in the blame for a goal against. A forward, really, they're rarely ever in a blame. We saw that with Dahlin last year. Everybody, you know, what is Darlene doing here and here? And I could tell you there were three or four breakdowns before he even got near Darlene. He actually had the guts to try to make the desperation play that caught everybody's eye. And for goalies, it's not an easy position, and it goes a long way when you can back your guys. And I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have the support of our organization. And I think those guys have, know the respect we have for them and their teammates have for them. And it's working out very well in that regard.
You know, Owen Power now has back-to-back games with goals after not scoring all season, and he's been playing well all year. He's not going to be a guy that's judged on the goal total. But I wonder from you, Don, your thoughts on like almost a comparison between his style versus Darlene's style. Because when I remember, even before you were in Buffalo, when Darlene shows up as a rookie, like there were similarities, super smooth, and you saw the talent, but not quite as aggressive when it came to the offensive side of the game. And I wonder if you see Power being a guy that will get more aggressive as he goes and someone where you might see the goal total go up at some point in his career. Or would you think he's just a different style of defenseman despite the fact, you know, number one picks, they'll be compared. I just wonder from you, like, Power, his style as a defenseman, and really what you kind of see from him in terms of the offensive side of his game going forward.
He has an incredible offensive potential. So what I think is going to happen, first of all, Rasmus Dahlin, we know he's an all-star. He probably should have been an all-star this year. He's off the charts. And everything that Owen does is easier for Owen than it was for Rasmus because Rasmus is here. And so that's number one. But Owen, not to take anything away from Owen, Owen's an incredible hockey player and done an amazing job to develop his skills, his hockey IQ at the age of 20 already. I don't and wouldn't be surprised to see him continue to score right now. I'm not going to say it's surprising that it took this long for him to get his first goal this year, but he easily could have had 5, 6, 7 goals by now this year. It just didn't happen for him. And you know how that, you know, as you feel your way through the NHL, it's a new level. You gain confidence every day. And we see that with Owen. The last thing I'll say is, you know, Owen is a different, you know, there are some different style attributes to Owen and Rasmus. But the great thing about it for all our fans and us as coaches and our organization is these guys are going to learn from each other through their whole career. So, you know, Owen may succeed in some way if attacking the zone entry or the net. And as soon as he does it, you got a guy just as talented as Darlene saying, oh, geez, I'm going to try that too, and vice versa. So that's the beauty of having great talent and depth of talent is they learn. There's a dynamic that starts where they all learn from each other and accelerate growth to even a higher level.
One last one for you, Don, for me. As we talk with Sabres head coach Don Granato, they're in Winnipeg tonight. Tage had a nice game against St. Louis. There'd been a bit of a goal drought for him, you know, but depth of scoring through the rest of the team and also Tage's own playmaking. Like, you've seen an uptick in that quite a bit, which I think coming into the year was a big thing for him to develop and showcase, and you've always been pretty confident that was there. So between Tage's playmaking, the rest of the line, the rest of the forwards, I mean, the depth of scoring and the ability of Tage to contribute, even when he's not necessarily filling the net at the same rate he normally had to be an encouraging sign as well.
I was never discouraged, actually, with anything to do with that. I think struggle and not scoring is healthy when you have talent and when you have work ethic, just complete drive and work ethic. Because what happens when Tage is not scoring or they take away scoring opportunities or key on him, he has to find ways to his intuition, his intuitive sense forces him to find other ways to contribute. And we've seen that in playmaking. So now he's reading that guys are covering him harder and quicker and identifying that means Skinner's open or Tuck's open now because they've double covered here. And he's catching that. He's becoming more aware of that. So that adversity that he may face there without scoring, he's learning to make it. So, and our power play's in that issue right now, too. When they take away Tage, that's actually a positive thing. We just have to identify all the other opportunities that are now open. So the process, I wouldn't say it's a blessing if our guys weren't talented and they weren't working. But any struggle and challenge, as long as they have those two ingredients, it's great because we see them right in front of our eyes add to their game. And if you can take Tage Thompson now with the production he's had and add to his game, and I do think the 12 games in 20 days is extremely hard on all of these athletes, as it is on Tage.
Don Granato. Don, thanks again for the time, and good luck tonight against the Winnipeg Jets.
Thanks, guys.
Sabres head coach Don Granato. 7 o'clock pregame, 8 o'clock faceoff, and mentioning like the point percentage that they need to make the playoffs. There's 35 games left, but they are very, very much in it. So it's fun. Good times. They play Winnipeg tonight. Minnesota will be Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And then are they home after that?
I think they're home for two before they go back out west.
Yeah.
A lot of Western games coming up. They're home for Carolina and Calgary before going. We get some Sabres after dark again at Kings, at Ducks, at Sharks, their California trip. And then Toronto, is that the first time they're finally here in February? I'm going way out, February 21st. But Toronto's here then. I think, if I have this right, I think that's the first game the Leafs are here all season. Which stinks, by the way.
Yeah.
That should happen a lot more often.
Yeah, the All-Star break. The Sabres are almost at the end of this very, very long stretch of games.
Yeah.
Jets tonight, Wild Saturday, then a good break for Wednesday against the Hurricanes, and then 10 days to the next game.
Yeah, Don said there, like, we have what do you say? It was 13 and 20, and then we have four games in the next 20 days?
Yeah.
And I had to double take, like, wait, how is that? And then I remember, oh, All-Star break.
Yep. January 29th to February 15th, they play four times. Like, it's kind of wild.
Yeah.
So they're going to get a much-needed rest. Sabres and Jets tonight, 8 o'clock. 803-0550. If you thought on the Bills, we were talking a lot about their coaching decisions to make. And we'll get to Bet It or Forget It as well. Tyler Dunn of Go Long TD joins us at 9 o'clock as well. We'll talk Bills and potential changes with him as well. 803-0550 to join us on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Give me a baby outside.
Yeah! Throw me that baby! Ow!
I signed my first baby.
Did you just sign it name?
Signed it my name on the forehead and then did Go Birds on the cheek. And I hope, personally, this turns into a thing. I would love to sign more babies.
Keep the line out the door, man.
Bring the babies.
Jason Kelce and Travis Kelce.
Who could play each other in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they could. They have a podcast, and it's good.
It's very good.
It's very good. It's very funny.
Of the players-hosted podcasts in sports, it might be the best one.
I agree. Because you get two different viewpoints, two different positions.
They got energy, too.
Yeah. It's funny.
Like, I love Von Miller's podcast would be up there for me, but Von's podcast doesn't have the same pop as that one. Like, that one is just like you're on a ride for 45 minutes with whoever they have on.
Yeah. 803-0550 to join us. Jeremy White, Sneaky Joe here on WGR. I had a quick text I want to read you, a tweet that came in from Johnny about Ken Dorsey. All right. So let's do this. Johnny wrote in about Ken Dorsey. That basically, Josh is the chef. And some nights, his ego gets the best of him, and it's a take-it-or-leave-it scenario. You can talk about Dorsey or any offensive coordinator having control or even being the one to blame, but it starts and ends with Josh. He decides what to do or not to do. Dorsey gives him suggested plays based on opponent. The bombs, the scrambles, the fumbles, and successful plays is all Josh. I think that it's in one ear, out the other. I love him, but he's going to go rogue sometimes, is basically what he's saying.
Uh-huh.
Which, there might be some truth there. But if you approach it that way, you basically don't have any coaches.
Right. Like, right. Do I need a coordinator at that point?
If you're saying that, well, Dorsey can only tell him what to do, and if he doesn't listen, that's not Dorsey's fault. And I would say, actually, it is.
Yeah.
That's the job. You have a quarterback that plays great off schedule. That's all well and good. But the thing that turned Allen from the raw, moldable piece of clay that was a, you know, bunch of traits all mashed together into one of the three best quarterbacks was very much coaching. It was coaching that did that.
Right. And even though he's deciding where to throw the football, he's not designing these plays, right? Like, he's not even calling these plays, I don't think, unless they're maybe in two-minute drill. So, I don't know. I feel like Dorsey is the chef in this situation. Allen is the cook. And just sometimes he thinks, oh, I can make something better than what the chef just told me to make.
Right, right.
So I'm gonna go off on my own. He's such a good cook that he's gonna, you know, even when he does something the chef doesn't tell him to, it's gonna sometimes turn out great. But also sometimes he's gonna set the kitchen on fire.
Yeah. It's about you want someone that can harness what he does.
But is that out there?
Yeah, of course. Brian Daboll did it. Ken Dorsey probably does do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, right? It's coaching.
Right. But, like, I don't know. Like, is this just Allen, though? Is Allen just... Maybe Daboll was the only guy. It's possible just because they grew up together and Daboll was his first offensive coordinator and he went through the progressions that Allen now being a more finished product of himself, he might just... have it in his head that, like, if I'm going to go off structure, I'm going to do it. And is there a coordinator, like, what are we looking for? A drill sergeant coordinator? It's going to, like, punish him when he does that? Like, I just don't know how you get the guy to stay within structure when that's clearly not in his DNA. Like, Daboll, it's possible to me, was the only guy that could have done that for him.
Well, it might not be in his DNA, but it's definitely in his skill set. We've seen him do it.
Yeah.
So it has been done successfully.
The other thing, too, to this is how, if he had more confidence that the structure would actually work and if things were easier for him, because sure, there were plays where he left out there where maybe he bailed on the pocket sooner than he had to, or, you know, he fit a ball into a super tight window and it didn't work when there was a wide open guy on the other side of the field. A lot of that, though, can be habits. A lot of that can be the guy picked up the habit of the year of, oh, guys are not really running open all that often.
Yeah.
So he's so accustomed to, I got to fit this into a tight window. I've got to make something out of nothing because I don't really have guys that get open. That's what I would wonder. And that, to me, goes back to personnel. If they draft a receiver in the first round and he's great, he's Brandon Ayuk, and now suddenly the Bills have a whole offense of guys that get open, Dorsey figures things out, and they look more like they did with Daboll. And they've just got guys running open all the time. Is Allen going to be going off structure, trying these crazy hero plays as often?
Right. We talk a lot about trust, and trusting a wide receiver might not be, you know, I know who he is as a person and trust him. It might just be, yeah, whenever I give him the ball, he runs into the end zone.
Yeah, right, right.
He runs past people, and there's a first down that comes immediately after. Or, you know, it's trusting Devontae Adams in a one-on-one, trusting Jamar Chase in a one-on-one. Throw it up there. I'm going to trust that guy to go get that ball. And, you know, trust is this person going to make a play for me? If all of a sudden you are having a lot of success with a short little pass over here on a slant to wide receiver that was drafted in the second round and he always takes it for 10 more, okay, that trust gets built pretty quickly. Let's get to Joe in Jamestown. What's up, Joe?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I want to go back. Yesterday, we were talking a little bit more about number two and number three receivers, and wanted to get your thoughts on Shakir playing a bigger role next year. We saw bits and pieces of him this year, and at times he was really getting open. I know he had some drops, but seemed to have some pretty consistent hands. And then second question, I want to get your thoughts. If you had to drill down to one key issue with the coaching, what would it be for you guys? I know for me, one thing that seemed to stand out for me is just the inability to adapt, particularly during games. It seemed like we had a game plan, and that was it. We weren't really willing to change at all, but I'm curious your guys' thoughts on that. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. I mean, I don't coach offensive football, so, you know, what do they need to do more of? The things that worked a lot for them, I'd like to see Allen rolling out more. He's lethal rolling to his right, feels like. Again, I would need to see the numbers. Did they do that as much as they used to?
Uh-huh.
Did they incorporate – I mean, they had better weapons at receiver in years past. John Brown, Emmanuel Sanders. I watched multiple years of them going 11 personnel and disregarding throwing to running backs, and then they decided to change to be a running back throwing team and then didn't throw to them. Like, it was the thing that always – that's going to jump out at me or whatever, it's going to stick with me for the entire offseason, is how they became a team that was focused on pass-catching running backs that they didn't throw to.
Yes.
And I don't understand it.
Uh-huh.
And both the head coach and the GM in their postgame talked about Nyheim Hines as a weapon. And he got no involvement in the offense. And I don't understand how that happened.
And I don't really want him that involved in the offense. Is anybody itching to see him play? He's a fine pass-catching running back in the NFL. Why should that ever be a feature of this offense? Ever. The quarterback doesn't throw to it. He throws down the field.
Unless it's going to be their version of a run game that keeps defenses honest.
Sure. Then at that point, I'm fine. But it's not. They did not trade for Christian McCaffrey. He's not a superstar. He's a fine player. He was good in Indianapolis.
It cost him a sixth round pick.
Right, exactly. I think it is dumbfounding that they thought that was a big ad, or treated that like that was something that was really going to help the passing offense in a valuable way.
After they drafted a pass-catching running back with the second-round pick.
And he didn't even play the position. He played more snaps at receiver. He might not have had a single target when he was at receiver, but the guy he wasn't even lined up in the backfield.
Yeah, it is one of the big mysteries, I think. Shane in New Jersey, what's up, Shane?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I said a couple things about kind of the coaching and how we're set up. I know there's been a lot of calls for Leslie Frazier to go, but ultimately, isn't it McDermott's defense? I'm not really sure, you know, what all that's going to change. McDermott doesn't really seem like a guy that's willing to change his ways. Hopefully he does, because I think, you know, that's the best way to evolve is, you know, to be open to change. And I think one of the things from the game this weekend, it was well established that the Bengals like getting the ball first, and they prefer it. We won the toss, and I said this back going to the Monday night game, we won the toss and deferred, and that plays right into the Bengals' hands. And that's what they wanted. They wanted to be aggressive. So, you know, I didn't like the not deferring. And then my last thing about Dorsey, it's not like when Brian Daboll got the ball or got the Giants job, he walked in through the locker room and collected all his playbooks. Like that framework should still be there. And they haven't really like used any of the stuff they were using in the past. Like I get it. It's Dorsey. He wants to do his own thing, but Dable's stuff was working. Why did we just completely scrap that and throw that out the window? Especially with like the pre-snap motion stuff.
I don't think they completely threw it out the window, but there definitely was a downtick in pre-snap motion, in RPOs, I think play action as well. They saw a downtick in four wide receiver sets. All of this was like very small, except maybe the pre-snap motion. That might have gone way down. I don't know. Yes. They all kind of went down a little bit. I think Dorsey tried to put his own spin on the offense. McDermott even talked about this, or was it Bean, when they talked about Beasley being here, that Beasley, like, he was walking into an offense that is similar than what he had here, but it took him a few weeks to kind of get up to speed on it. So there's enough differences to where it's not just Dable's offense that Dorsey's just running. The differences, though, don't appear to be things that are helping the quarterback. Like, the things he's changed don't appear to be good for the offense as a whole. And that's where the frustration comes.
803-0550.
And by the way, on Frazier, I would also agree that it's McDermott's defense, but Frazier's the one calling the plays. Right? McDermott's not calling plays on defense.
Right. Yeah, they put together a game plan, and then he executes it.
Right. So if he's not good at that, yeah, it's still McDermott's defense, and you'd want a coordinator, I'm sure, that if it's not Frazier, that it has experience in a similar defense that McDermott likes. But you might just be evaluating, okay, who's good at calling my plays on defense when it comes to Frazier or not.
Don't know what to think about this AFC champ. I don't really know what to think about either one of these games. These are two good matchups.
They're all super close spreads. The look-ahead spreads to the Super Bowl matchups
are amazing.
They're all within 2.5.
Basically, the look-ahead spreads. Okay, so the spread in every single game, no matter the matchup, you can kind of, I think if you parse it out, it means they think, the books think the Eagles are 1.5 better than the other three teams that are all the same.
Yeah.
Like if the Bengals or the Chiefs make it, it's the same spread no matter who they play.
Yeah.
If the Niners make it, it's the same spread no matter who they play. If the Eagles make it, they're a favorite.
Yep.
And the other games are pretty much pick'ems. Right? Like Eagles 1.5 over either team, Niners pick 'em over either team. So to me that says three even teams and the Eagles 1.5 point favorites.
Right.
Which is, I mean, we've had Super Bowls with 10-point spreads. And we came into the year thinking the NFC was a joke and the AFC was the powerhouse.
Yep.
And here as it stands, the NFC is likely to be either a pick 'em or a favorite in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. It's because of the quarterbacks.
It's because of the quarterbacks.
Right, like, but Hurts took a step, a huge step.
Yeah, he was a full participant at practice, too. Like, he's good to go. He's not even on the injury report.
And Hurts. The Niners, it just doesn't matter who their quarterback is.
Yep.
Because otherwise, that kind of rung true, didn't it? The AFC, especially with Lawrence and Tua taking the steps they did, the AFC's got, like, 8 young quarterbacks that are like, these are franchise guys. The NFC, I mean, it's still true about that conference that there's no young franchise quarterbacks.
Who's the third best quarterback in the NFC? Who's first?
Hurts, isn't it?
Okay.
Hurts is number one.
Is Dak number two?
Like, let me do it this way. I'm starting a franchise right now with an NFC quarterback. I'm picking Hurts one.
Who's
the second guy? Beginning of the year, I might have told you Kyler Murray. But I don't think he's now with the ACL and the season he had. I'm not picking him. So I would not want to pick Dak, but maybe it is Dak. The NFC was the old guys. That's why. It was Brady and Rodgers, and they both stepped back, and now there's nobody there to fill the – it's Cousins.
Right.
Daniel Jones. Like, the top teams are there, but I still think the preseason notion of, like, what the NFC was, that still came true because the quarterback – we're going through it now. It's not strong.
And if you did start a franchise draft, you mentioned, you know, Hurts in the AFC. AFC quarterbacks that would go before the next NFC quarterback after Hurts.
So how many AFCs
before the second NFC quarterback? It'd be Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Lawrence, Herbert.
Lamar Jackson,
six.
Who after that?
Do I get to Tua?
Is Tua over Tua or Dak?
Do I get to Kenny Pickett?
Oh, man.
Do I get to, you know, like it's...
I mean, isn't Derek Carr versus Dak close?
Might be.
I might be close. It's like 10.
I think Dak
it's like 10 guys.
I generally think Dak gets too much blame. I think he's pretty darn good, but...
Yeah.
And now he's dealing with the Mike McCarthy scenario.
He had a tough...
I guess Rodgers.
Tough year.
Ooh, when we get back, 7 destinations for Brady. You didn't.
Yes,
give
it. I
got to see if you can get all 7. There are 7 ranked destinations for Tom Brady. We'll see if Joe can nail all 7 of them, according to Mark Sessler of NFL.com. That, your phone calls, Tyler Dunn, top of the hour. Just noticing something. LeBron James is 158. Is it 158 points away from becoming the NBA's all-time leading scorer?
Yes.
So we're going to see LeBron do that in the next couple weeks.
Yep.
Ovechkin is on track to, maybe in a couple years, year and a half, become the all-time leading goal scorer. The all-time leading passer in NFL history is active and looking for a new team.
Mm-hmm.
And baseball, not so much, not as much. So Brady, go ahead.
On Brady, we were just doing the, like, is Mahomes going to be the all-time passer at one point? Brady has the record now. Like, is that a record that gets broken every 10 years? It might not. So Brady right now is at 89,000 career passing yards, and he hasn't retired yet. Mahomes, if he averaged, he'd have to average 5,000 yards playing until he's 40 years old to get that record.
Yeah, it's
so
hard.
He'd have to play into his 40s
yeah.
to break the record. So Brady, because he is playing so freaking long, might just like, he's cementing it as like, this is going to be my record forever.
One follow-up question. In 5 years, will 6,000 yards be the new normal?
Also a good question.
I mean,
maybe
the numbers explode.
And there's an extra game than there used to be.
Yep. I challenge you to give me the seven teams Tom Brady, according to Mark Sessler at NFL.com, Tom Brady's seven landing spots.
Okay, seven. So
he has them ranked.
All right, I'm going to try to go one through seven, but that's probably going to be tough. I'll just try to get the seven. The Raiders.
Number 1A. He lists the Raiders as 1A.
Does this include, I guess, Tampa?
Tampa's not on the list. But
okay.
They are unranked.
Okay.
He kind of leaves. Yeah, he kind of took them off the table.
Okay, how about the New York Jets?
The New York Jets, he ranks seventh.
Really?
Yep.
I was thinking like two or three. New England.
New England, he ranks sixth.
Okay. How about the Dolphins?
No, 1B.
1B.
Raiders 1A, Dolphins 1B.
We're really tracking him because there was a video yesterday of him touring schools in Miami for his kids yesterday. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of that. Okay, how about the... Let's go with the Carolina Panthers.
Yes. Fourth.
It's a good landing spot. They've got everything team-wise he needs.
And they could lure Sean Payton, maybe. They're interested.
And the division is a cakewalk.
Yep.
The Saints.
Not listed.
Damn. Okay. How many have left?
You're missing two.
Oh. How did I not? 49ers.
Number three. Yes. So, Dolphins, Raiders, Niners, Panthers, the fifth team. Ian Rappaport has said they are a candidate.
Tennessee.
Yes.
Tennessee. I had to guess New Orleans. Otherwise, it was there. 7-8. I'll take it. Tennessee getting Brady. I already hate the Titans. They get Tom Brady. I don't think I will ever have hated a team. It'll be 07 Ottawa vibes for me. Just wanting to bludgeon them every time they play.
Trying to think of, like, picturing Brady in all these jerseys.
None of them
look actually good. Think the Raiders could be kind of cool.
Yep.
Dolphins, annoying. Niners, annoying. I like Kyle Shanahan. I don't want to have to. Panthers.
That would look weird.
Hilarious.
That would look so strange.
Titans. Ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Patriots. Pathetic.
Yep.
Jets.
Really weird.
Very.
Is that the weirdest one?
It might be.
Because it's like that new Jet uniform, too. Like the all-green helmets. And
He should tell them they can't wear the black jerseys if he's going to play there. Those are weird. I don't like the Jets jerseys at all.
I'm Brady. You got it. Would they do it? He tells them, I'll come here, but you got to change your uniforms.
Maybe. We got to get a break in. Tyler Dunn on the other side. We'll mix your phone calls in as well on the Bills. Talking a lot about the Bills, their coaching staff. Tyler Dunn has a piece up at GoLongTD.com most recently about Brandon Bean's comments about picking high in the draft. So you want to give us a call? You can. Tyler's up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.